Car Focus with Clem Ryan. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
Well, you're very welcome to another edition of Kildare Focus between now and 3 o'clock. Clem standing in for Quiva this week. Well, we've got a very interesting lineup on the programme today because we're going to be joined in our opening segment by Dr. Ghislaine Waba Abdel Majid, Palestine Ambassador to Ireland, regarding the current conflict and indeed historical situation, etc. Also, Jean Monnet, Professor of European Integration, Director of the Maynooth Centre for European and Eurasian Studies at Maynooth University, will give us his view of what is happening in this current tragic conflict. We'll also be hearing from... get that bit of sound down in it. Also, we're continuing our discussion regarding the menopause yesterday evening that we had yesterday afternoon. We were joined by Catherine on the programme. We have another Catherine, Christine, on the programme. We have a Catherine on the programme today. We'll just give her first name. She got in touch with us to say she has been through the menopause and she'd like to share her experience by way of helping others cope with the condition who might be experiencing difficulty. And as if you didn't know it already, Budget 24 is already underway since 1 o'clock. Owen and myself will go through the main provisions for you at around 10:45 or thereabouts. It's not as if we're going to hear anything new from what we've already heard. All right then, the Israeli military have said today that Hamas operatives had nowhere to hide, are the words that they are carrying out intensive airstrikes in waves every 4 hours. They're quoted as saying, "We will reach them everywhere," chief military spokesman of the Israeli Defense Forces said in a briefing. The Israeli Air Force has announced on social media is, and I quote, "launching an extensive air attack against terror targets," as they call it, of the terrorist organization Hamas in the Gaza Strip. At this stage, we're well aware of the attacks that were launched on Saturday and the tragic outcome of those on both sides of this conflict, which many people might say goes back decades. It goes back further than that. It goes back to 1948, the setting up when Israel declared themselves officially a republic. It goes back to the early 1900s when the British withdrew and, as they've done in many cases around the world, left kind of carnage behind them. Political expedience coming into play by powers around the world in the modern times. Is this a proxy war that's going on where Russia, Iran, the United States and others have vested interests? And indeed, both sides will claim proprietorial rights in the area for over thousands of years. The Jewish people on one hand claiming that it is their original holy land, and of course the Palestinians claiming this is their homeland since the beginning of time. Various aspects of it might prove very, very complex to people, but what is of no doubt whatsoever is that the people living in particular and on the Gaza Strip and even in the West Bank have for decades suffered exploitation, marginalisation, apartheid by the Israeli authorities. The Israelis, from their point of view, tend to say, "We have a legitimate right to exist as a state. We have a right to defend ourselves. We are just protecting our existence." Let's get a view anyway from Dr. Ghislaine Waba Abdel Majid, who's the Palestine ambassador to Ireland. And Ambassador, you're very welcome to the programme. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you very much for having me today.
I've tried to give just a very broad snapshot overview of various aspects of this conflict, which, as we say, has not begun today or yesterday. But so far, give me an overview of your reaction so far to what has transpired since Saturday when Hamas launched its attack and the Israeli response. If you set a context for us, please.
Yes, I mean, let me say something. First of all, these developments didn't occur in vacuum. I mean, Israel, for the past decades, humiliating, oppressed, and occupied the Palestinians in every single aspect. What's going on now in Gaza, it's another war crime. I mean, I heard that you mentioned that it's every 4 hours, Israel attacking. Every single minute, Israel attacking civilians. And what I wanted to say here, it's every loss of civilian lives is painful, and all civilians should be protected or are protected in the international law. But the people in Gaza, you talk about 2 million people live in a very condensed, I mean, it's in a very condensed area, and Israel is almost wiped out. Oh, everything in Gaza. I mean, their what called defense minister yesterday, what he said, we are fighting animals, and we will act accordingly. What animals? I mean, what kind of expressions? What kind of thoughts? What kind of strategies they have in their minds? The Palestinian people are human beings. We deserve life. We deserve freedom. We deserve to have our own free state. But what's going on now? It's out of, I don't know. It's violating every aspect of international law. Israel now is committing a war crime against the Palestinians. We talk about more than 700 people. I mean, this morning, a few minutes before you were you called me. I mean, my neighborhood was wiped out. I mean, all the memories that I have, it's not there anymore. The families, the friends, the neighbors, it's really, I mean, it's a tragic to see all the memories, all the childhood memories is wiped out just because Israel wanted to revenge. It's a war crime. What to say? We have to say to the international community, I mean, have no blind eyes over what's going on. Don't only think about Israel. We, the Palestinians, have the right to defend ourselves. We have the right to live in peace. We have the right to live without any humiliations, without oppression, without any occupation, all the time oppressed our people. This is my message to the international community.
And I respect that message, Ambassador. And if I might just to try and set an overall context of this, I mean, to say that this conflict has gone on for decades is an understatement. I think the world is aware, and the international community has moved consistently to espouse the cause of the Palestinian people to have an independent state of their own, to have a two-state set up, Israel on the one hand, Palestine on the other. We had the Oslo Accords of 2003. We had Israel withdrawing from Gaza after 15 years. We had the Intifada, a couple of uprisings from the Palestine. Will you try to, from the Palestinian side, can you try to explain to our listeners why is it that Israel and Palestine cannot come to an arrangement that would respect the territorial integrity and the rights to statehood of both peoples?
Listen, the Oslo Agreement that was signed in 1994, I mean, we recognize the rights of Israel to exist. And we commit ourselves to a peace path. And since then, we didn't actually even deviate from this path. The Palestinian people, the five and a half million of the Palestinians who live in West Bank, including East Jerusalem and Gaza, they dedicate themselves to take this path of it. For more than 20 years of negotiation, we reach nowhere. The more Israel control the West Bank, the more settlements, the colonization settlements. We talk about that now. More than 700,000 Israeli colonial settlers live in more than 300 settlements in the West Bank, controlling 62% of Area C, what they call Area C in the West Bank. So all the agreements that Israel signed is not respecting. And the international community as well, put the commitment when we signed the Oslo Agreement that after 5 years of negotiation, we'll talk about the final solution and we'll talk about Palestinian state. This happened in 1995 and we are now 2023. Nothing happened except more settlers, more expropriation of land, more oppression against the Palestinian people. And since 2008, five aggressions against Gaza. And this is, every time we say this is the worst, but it seems that now it's not the worst. And I hope that this will send a message that Israel, the one that they don't want peace, why there are the two-state solution that we agree. And actually, it came from Ireland. Ireland went the way they really, support this. And yesterday, actually, I want to send through your station, my thanks to the Irish government, because there was a decision need to be taken, or in the EU to block the aid for the Palestinians. And Ireland, among other three countries, they blocked this decision. That because they understand what that means to the Palestinians. So okay. The misery, yeah.
Okay, so just if I just stay in the context of it for the moment, and you say, for example, that Israel has not respected the existence of Palestine, and many people out there will see exactly where you're coming from, that the development of settlements in traditional Palestine areas by Israelis had continued, often with very aggressive support from the Israeli Defence Forces. We know that Netanyahu is regarded as the most right-wing prime minister that Israel has had in nearly half a century, and certainly he doesn't seem to be one for resolving the situation peacefully. But the Israelis will say, when you say about the calls on Israel to respect Palestinian statehood, the Israelis will say, but our statehood is not respected because the group that carried out the attack on Saturday, Hamas, does not recognise Israel as you and the Palestine Authority have recognised. It, in fact, is dedicated to the eradication of the state of Israel off the map.
Let me clarifying this issue. I mean, when you talk about the Palestinian people, you talk about more than five million people who, when we signed the agreements, the peaceful agreements, they believe in the international community, and they believe that the support of the state of Palestine free on 22% as a compromise. But since we signed this, there is nothing happened. You talk about Palestinian people. I'm not talking about groups here, because I'm here representing the people of Palestine.
Palestine include Hamas ambassador.
Yes, I mean, you cannot in Israel now. How many months the people in Israel are protesting for this right wing? I mean, the extreme right wing in Israel. You talk about some people among the government of Israel who doesn't believe in Palestinians. They want to wipe us. They wanted to wipe all the Palestinians. Mm. They don't believe in anything. Why the international community? They don't consider that.
And could I put the point to you, Ambassador, that Hamas as a group dedicated to the obliteration of Israel, there have been accusations and allegations made that the Palestine Authority, in fact, has tolerated the existence of Hamas. Maybe you can't do anything about it. And even allegations that some of the EU development funding going to Palestine was finding its way into Hamas hands, by which they would then use to rearm themselves and further attack Israel.
I just wanted to make a point. I mean, Hamas, whether you accept it or you don't accept it, and I'm not here wanted to talk about this anymore, but it's part of the Palestinian people. There are groups, there are militant groups, whether you accept it or not, it's there. There are different views from the majority of the Palestinians. However, the money that goes to the Palestinian, it goes to the Palestinian civilians. I don't think that, every Palestinian in the West Bank and Gaza enjoyed the money of they get the aid through humanitarian projects. So if you want to just to discuss about the extremists in both sides, this is something it's not me who can justify these things. The Palestinian Authority that represent, or the Palestinian who represent the Palestinian people, talk in a different way. As I said, we choose the peace path. and we will continue as we believe in this.
And I respect that, your position on that, Ambassador, but nevertheless, we cannot extricate from this discussion the role of Hamas, because they exist within and without the West Bank and possibly or the Gaza Strip and possibly the West Bank as well, but certainly the Gaza Strip. They launched their attack on Saturday. We know the numbers that have died on both sides of the equation, because for the death and carnage they inflicted on Israeli people, the vast majority of them innocent civilians, men, women and children and festival goers, have they not now created by that attack and the response of Israel, which I outlined at the beginning of the programme, which is to crush basically Hamas within the Gaza Strip and maybe crush the Gaza Strip in total and reoccupy it again. My question in a nutshell is, they have hundreds of hostages now inside the Gaza Strip, Israeli hostages. Are your people of Palestine not also hostages, given that they are now basically that Hamas is using them as cover against the Israeli response?
Listen, I said from the beginning, and I repeated again, that these developments didn't occur in vacuum. I mean, for so many years now, we're trying to talk to the international community that the rights of the Palestinians should be respected. We're talking about that the rights of the Palestinians that all the time were humiliated and not respected. You cannot just put the blame over the whole situation. Now it's escalating because of this here or there. I mean, you're talking about a cause of this. So we have to dig in the root causes of this problem. You cannot just discuss what's going on now just because of that.
And Ambassador, I outlined at the very beginning, in fact, this didn't start today nor yesterday. It has to be viewed in its historical context. But just to ask you, Ambassador, as the international community condemns as an international war crime the collective punishment of the people of Gaza by bombing it into pulp indiscriminately, can you and the Palestinian Authority condemn the manner of the Hamas attack on Saturday, which inflicted death and injury on hundreds and hundreds of innocent people, many of them, 250 of them, actually attending a music festival which was all about peace?
Listen, I mean, since yesterday I've been asked this question, and I will repeat the same answer. I mean, the condemnation should be goes to Israel. Israel is the committing the war crimes against the Palestinian people. I repeat myself again and say every loss in civilian lives is painful, and all the civilians should be protected in international, or they are protected in the international law. Now I'm talking about the destruction of Gaza, the war crimes committed against Gaza. This is my talk. I'm here to talk about the suffering of my people. If you want to talk about this, that would be like, you know, a message coming from the representative of the Palestinians to the whole community, the international community, that this massacre should be stopped. This war crime should be stopped. Israel should be accountable for itself. We, the Palestinian people, are human beings. We deserve a better life. We deserve a peaceful life. We deserve freedom. And we deserve to, I mean, to have a peaceful life.
Yes, and nobody will argue, and very few people, Ambassador, will argue with the sentiments you've just expressed. On the other side of the debate, is it not fair to say that Israel has a right to defend itself? It has a right. It has, just if I just might say this, it has a right to defend itself, its statehood, which you have recognised, which Hamas hasn't. And in the killing, any country, if its borders were breached and attacked by any organisation not recognised officially within the state of Palestine, as I understand it, because they are designated as, if you like, a terrorist group by internationally. I know another view might be that they're freedom fighters for Palestine and that. But from an Israeli perspective, surely any country that is attacked in the manner that it was on Saturday, and particularly the way hostages were taken, men, women and children, a woman in her 80s, people shot on the spot, everything else. Actions that the Israelis possibly have carried out on your people in the past. But is it not understandable then that Israel might reply in the way it has? And do you fear, Ambassador, for the future of Gaza now, given the declared Netanyahu attention? As he said yesterday, they want war, we'll give them war in a way that they have never known.
Imagine, who on earth from the normal people, like, you know, wanted to have war? Who really wanted to, not to grow their children in peace? I wanted my children to grow up normally in a peaceful situation, in a peaceful, free lands for the Palestinians. I mean, for so many years now, we've tried to defend our right to exist, to be there, to live peacefully. I mean, whoever on earth wanted this war? I mean, we are the hostage of the Israelis now. I mean, the Israelis now taking more than 2 million Palestinians living in Gaza as a hostage. What do you expect? I mean, who defend us from the world? Since 1948, who defends the Palestinian right? Who defends the Palestinian right to exist, to have their own state? I mean, since 1967, since 1948, how many refugees live around in Palestine?
And millions of your people, Ambassador, have been millions of your people have been displaced, Ambassador. I acknowledge that.
Who defend our rights? Who defend us as the Palestinians?
Well, let me.
Let me bring you
around to who defends the Palestinian people. And there is the question of this being a proxy war, that Iran, on the one hand, who has already announced that they approve Hamas, probably prepared them, weaponized them, probably gave them the go-ahead. There's speculation that Russia, it's in Russia's interest that their finger is in this particular issue as well, because it will detract from Ukraine. It will also occupy the so-called Western powers. You have the United States, a long, long time ally.
Listen, you deviated from the whole issue. I mean,
I need to ask you this. If you'd let me complete the question, hopefully you'll understand where I'm coming from. Because I'm talking about the implications for your people, your people's survival. That you have the major powers who are basically taking advantage of, utilizing this struggle, probably stoking it at times for their own geopolitical reasons.
Listen, I don't want to involve in such, like, you know, politics that take more than other dimensions of the whole situation in Palestine. I mean, I'm not here to discuss why, what kind of proxy. I'm here to defend my people, to defend my people's rights to exist and live in peace, to defend the right of my people to have their own free state. And I think the international community should take measures and implement the international law and stop these war crimes against Gaza. This is my words that I...
How do you think that might happen, Ambassador? How do you think that Israel, given that it's one of the major military powers in the world, the US has already stationed their €2 billion of arms, according to reports. It's going to supply billions more. It has sent its most powerful aircraft carrier and battle fleet into the region. So basically, from a military point of view, Israel cannot be defeated. What do you think is the future way to sort this, with the threat of Gaza being now reoccupied by the Israelis and the struggle of your people continuing for decades or hundreds of years to come, maybe?
Listen, I mean, there is international law. We are not live in jungle. I mean, international law should be respected. There is the UN, there is the ICJ, there is the ICC, there is international law that the countries should be respected. If you wanted to discuss the power, and if you want to discuss who is stronger and who have more military or who have more weapons and all these things, I mean, we will lose this equation. But if you wanted to respect the international law, which was put for the countries to be safe, to be, I mean, at least backed by this legal system of the world, otherwise as I said, we live in a jungle, and anyone who are stronger, who are really have the weapons, he can control everything. But what from my like, you know, perspective, when I see countries like European Union, yes, now it's different, but respecting the international law, when you go to the UN and you have voice that is respected by the international law, there I put my confidence that I wouldn't get back things because we are weak or we are strong or the others, they have weapons. I do believe that we have a just right, and the international law should protect it. And
it should, but how can it protect you, Ambassador, as an experienced...
They should implement the international law.
But Ambassador, in fairness, we have seen issues all around the world. We know the people of, you know, many, many different countries. I think of Yemen, for example, where people are being slaughtered and famine and everything else. Countries around the world. Words are spoken at the UN. We condemn this, we condemn that. International law would prevail. You're an experienced diplomat, Ambassador. You know that these are just words, and ultimately the interests of every particular major power will trump everything, and in that case Israel has the ear of the major powers.
But, like, you know, we have to continue like that, because if this if the Palestinians just think that we don't trust international law, we don't trust that we have, because, you know, the Palestinians believe that we have a just cause, and we have, we really belong to these people who think that international law should be respected. If we deviated from that, we will be the big losers. So, I mean, among other countries in the world who believe in that, we will find a way. You cannot just, I mean, rule the whole world with power. Yes, it is there. This is what we witness now in the world. Everywhere, here and there, it's, if you're strong, you rule. But this is not the case anymore in open, like, you know, international war, aware of the international law. We are among those nations and countries who believe and still believe in international law, and we will continue fight with the international law. I mean, we won't go for any other path than the peace. This is our belief. This is how we believe in our cause. It's a just cause, and we will find a way one day, supported by the international law.
And has Hamas not set your cause back by possibly 100 years by the virtue of its attack, the manner of its attack on Saturday, which has garnered international sympathy around the world and international condemnation? And notwithstanding that all of those people, and most of those people who have consistently expressed support for your people, at the same time can condemn the actions of Hamas because of the deaths caused and the resulting destruction it causes for your people and the Gaza Strip. Can you not just condemn that and say Hamas has done us untold, has done the prospects of we being recognised of peace an untold damage?
Israel, the occupying power, is committing war crimes against our people in Gaza. This is my word. The condemnation should go to Israel. And
I know, and should it come to Hamas as well, because Hamas is committing war crimes against innocent people in Israel.
I'm clear in this. Every loss of civilian life is painful. And I repeat myself again that Israel, the one should be blamed, should be condemned of the war crimes committed in Gaza at the right minute and since 1967 against the Palestinian people.
All right, Ambassador. Look, we all personally and professionally, and we all look on aghast at the destruction, the killing and the deaths. And I think it's fair to say that it's everyone's wish that there could be some reconciliation and that peace will ultimately prevail. But given the events of the last 2 days, that would be a very slim hope at the moment. I thank you most sincerely for joining us on the programme today. Our thoughts go to your people in Gaza, and particularly to those of the dead on both sides of the carnage that's ensued since Saturday morning. Ambassador Dr. Gilan Waba Abdel-Majid, I hope I got your name correctly, and please excuse me if I didn't, Palestine Ambassador to Ireland, thank you for joining us on the programme, and good afternoon to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, dear. Thank you very much, Clem. Thank you.
You're very welcome indeed.
Kildare Focus with Clem Ryan. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
Okay, welcome back. Now, we're going to have a look at the budget situation next. We've been trying to get in touch with Catherine, by the way, to continue our debate on the menopause. Catherine, if you're listening out there, your phone keeps going to message. But if we can't get Catherine today, maybe we'll have her back tomorrow. But let's hear Pascal O'Donoghue, Minister for Finances, on his feet in the Dáil. Let's hear a little bit of what he's saying.
Numbers is key to building capacity and further progress in the reform programme which is underway, and this allocation will provide for the recruitment, the training, the support of a net additional 400 military personnel next year, as well as posts across the Department of Defence and our Defence Forces to implement reform and important roles such as cyber responders and data and cyber analysts. So this recognises the vital work of our defence forces here at home and abroad. And this is also because we play such a proud role in world affairs. We're known for our contribution to global peace. In 2023, Ireland provided the highest ever level of official development assistance in cash terms and as a percentage of our gross national income. I'm proud we have met the twin challenges of providing for war refugees without losing sight of other crises, including the drought in the Horn of Africa and the awful floods in Pakistan. So in 2024, I am providing €776.5 million in funding to Irish Aid in the Department of Foreign Affairs, which is an 8.4% increase in the level of funding last year, allowing this to reach a record level. We'll also provide at least half of the additional funding necessary to achieve the government's 2025 climate finance pledge.
And that's Pascal Donoghue, Minister for Finance, who's speaking in the Dáil at the moment. But the Dáil speeches have been underway since Michael McGrath took to his feet at around 1 o'clock. Let's have an overview indeed of what has been greatly flagged over the last couple of days. And we'll begin, and I'm joined by Owen indeed. And Owen, we'll begin with the whole area of tax.
Yeah, absolutely. Personal employee, PAYE and earned income tax credits are being increased by €100 each. So the standard rate incomes tax cut-off point has been increased to €2,000 to bring entry to the higher rate of income tax to €42,000.
Okay, now children.
Yeah, looking at children then, the home carer tax credit and the single person child carer credit will be increased by €100. So that'll be €200 then for the incapacitated child tax credit as well.
Now, electricity and much speculation about energy credits and all of that, but the VAT rate is going to change.
Yeah, this is Michael McGrath, says he's proposing to extend the 9% reduced VAT rate for gas and electricity for another 12 months.
All right, moving on to motoring, which many people will be interested in, and a temporary universal relief of €10,000 to the original market value in relation to the benefit in kind regime to encourage the use of electric vehicles for company car purposes. He's temporarily suspending the tapering of the preferential BIC relief and maintaining the existing €35,000 original market value, and people who are involved in that will understand what it means. In housing, the Help to Buy scheme is being extended to the end of 2025. Households now own a number of measures announced there.
Yeah, interesting that Help to Buy scheme is being extended to 2025, because I was talking to Piers Doherty on the programme last week and he said that if Sinn Féin were in government, they wouldn't have a Help to Buy scheme. So there we go, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael obviously extending it. But households, Michael McGrath has announced that he'll introduce a one-year mortgage interest tax relief for homeowners with an outstanding mortgage balance on their primary dwelling house of between 80,000 and 500,000 as of at the end of December last year.
Right, there are provisions on rental, for example, the subject to certain conditions being met, rental income of 3,000 a year in 2024, 4,000 in 2025 and 5,000 for the years 25 or 26 and 27 will be disregarded at the standard rate. There's provisions also with corporation tax and so on, and business provisions as well. But moving along to those that might be affect people more individually. Going back to tax again, what has he announced in regards to VAT?
Yeah, that's an increase in the existing VAT registration threshold for businesses from €37,500 for services and €75,000 for goods, up to €40,000 for services and €80,000 for goods, respectively.
Okay, in climate and infrastructure, climate and nature fund is being established, and the zero VAT rate on the supply and installation of solar panels is being extended to schools from the 1st of January, while VRT relief for battery electric vehicles is being extended to 2025, which might hold and bring down the cost of cars, or electric cars in particular. Now, I've never heard this term, consanguinity relief regarding agriculture. What is that about, Owen?
Yeah, I'm sure farmers who are tuned in this afternoon will know what we're talking about.
But will they?
It apparently supports the transfer of farms from one generation to the next. That's being extended for a period of 5 years. The accelerated capital allowances for farm safety equipment is also being extended, and the maximum aggregate lifetime limit of a number of farm-related reliefs is being increased to €100,000.
Yeah, there's other provisions involved. Alcohol and cigarettes, the old reliables.
Here we
go. The excise duty on a packet of cigarettes. Jesus, lads, if you're on the fags, it's been increased by 75 cents. Used to be always 50. A pack of fags is now going to cost you €16.75. Minister McGrath told the Dáil he's proposing to introduce a domestic tax on e-cigarettes and vaping products in next year's budget. 75 cent. Of course, the counter criticism of that often comes is you are punishing and penalising people on the one hand in the lower income groups more than those in the higher income groups who can afford the 16.75. The other point being made is that those who are anti-smoking will say that pushing up the prices has been proven to reduce all of that.
And the Irish Heart Foundation, they were calling for a packet of cigarettes to be €20. They wanted it to be essentially €1 per cigarette. And I'm sure there's people tuned into us. I know you weren't a smoker, Clem, but they'd remember going in and maybe getting 10 Major or 10 Woodbine and how much they had to pay for those.
Well, maybe everybody will fly to Lanzarote, Owen, or something, because cartons of cigarettes in the Canary Islands and other islands there, in back a couple of years ago when I was there, they were around €24 for a carton, which I think was 10 packets,
right,
which would now cost you €160 here. To pay you to take a flight and head off for a week.
Are you heading off anytime soon, though? We'll get people to get in touch with you. You can just give Clem a ring, and if he's heading to Lanzarote, he'll sort you out.
Yeah, I am actually.
Well, then. But
I don't think the bags are big enough to take all the requests that would come in. I'd be one of these people caught with 10 million cigarettes at Dublin Airport or something. Now, Owen, we want to move on to the so-called winter supports, which the minister announced at around 10 to 2 or thereabouts. What has he announced for all households?
Yeah, all households will receive a further set of credits to assist with energy bills over the winter period. Three credits of €150 each will be provided between the end of this year and April next year, and also a €300 lump sum payment will be made to recipients of the fuel allowance in the last quarter of this year.
Okay, I'm going to take a quick break there, Owen, because we're moving along. But when we come back, folks, we're going to be telling you about the welfare changes and some nice little goodies in there for people as well. Tereshom Tosavig Shaw.
Kildare Focus with Clem Ryan.
Welcome back. We haven't been able to get in touch with Catherine, who was to join us to discuss further on menopause and share her experiences of it. But what we will do is return to the topic, hopefully tomorrow. And G, who has sent me a message regarding perimenopause and that, and regards how it affects a woman's life. G, thank you for that message. Maybe you might have a chat with us about it as well, but we'll get someone on and we'll talk a little bit more about that condition, which impacts so many women and affects negatively in the main many aspects of their life, and which I think most men, we don't really understand the full nature of the condition. Right, now we're going back to the budget, but before we do and discuss the welfare changes, I think Pearse Doherty is on his feet in Dáil Éireann.
For the Sinn Féin two-sided and Gheargam Díacta, for the real shot in the gloom to Dini, a Vietnam may chance at a good to hear a Yale, not a Kisu, a Gislerian and Kanash Nishaw, now will plan Egan real to fios a heart or seal in the Dini. The government's abject failure to deliver affordable homes to buy and to reduce rents is crushing the living standards of ordinary people, and it's punishing those so desperate to build for the future. And the government and the minister over there has missed every single target that he has set on affordable housing. Every single one of them he has missed year after year since taking office. But what's more fundamental is that the plan that underpins this budget and the targets, even if they were reached, are doomed to fail. And we know that, and you know that, and everybody knows that. These targets are universally acknowledged as being too low. So what's the government done in its budget to respond to all of that today? You didn't increase the targets at all. Not one additional home are you planning to build of what you've already set out. Not one additional home. There's no ramp up in housing under this budget. Last year, in 2023, you allocated €2.6 billion to the Capital Housing Programme. This year, you allocate the same amount of money. No increased investment, no increased urgency. It is in the middle of a housing crisis, Minister. It is a shameful. You couldn't make this up, but you have decided not even to ramp up housing delivery what you have up before what you've planned.
There's Pearse giving it welly, as they might say. And have we ever heard an opposition politician on Budget Day saying anything good about a budget? Anyway, let's go back to our examination about the provisions that have been announced this afternoon. And Owen, just before the break, we were moving on to social welfare supports.
Yeah, Minister Pascal Donoghue said an additional €200 will be paid this year to recipients of the Living Alone Allowance. The Christmas bonus to those in receipt of regular social protection payments will be paid in early December. A once-off double-week cost of living support payment to all qualifying social protection recipients will be paid in January. A special once-off payment of €400 will be made before Christmas to those who receive the carer's support, disability allowance, blind pension, invalidity pension and the domiciliary care allowance. A double payment of child payment worth an additional €140 for each child will be made up to all qualifying households before Christmas, and also a double payment of the foster care allowance will be made this year.
And there's a €400 lump sum as well payment coming into the mix there, I think.
Yeah, that's for working family payments. That will be made later this year, and for the first time this budget provides a lump sum payment to each child in receipt of the qualified child increase.
All right, we heard during the week about the amount of money that parents are paying in voluntary contributions to school. We're told that an extension of the fee waiver for students sitting state exams, a €60 million capitation payment for schools to continue to meet increased running costs and funding for support for the most disadvantaged groups, a once-off reduction of the student contribution fee by €1,000 for free fees students, a once-off reduction of approximately a third in the contribution fee for apprentices in higher education, yeah, an increase in postgraduate tuition fee contribution by €1,000 for student grants as well.
Just to jump in on that, and I'm sure there's parents listening this afternoon, and the minister announcing that extension of the fee waiver on school transport services for a further year, that's welcome, but it has to be followed up with more bus providers being put out there,
yeah,
because, you know, how many children have we seen here in Kildare not being able to get a place on a school bus? So it's one thing saying that we're going to waive the fees, but another thing then to make sure that there's enough buses there to meet the demand.
Yeah, and you have covered this. We're hearing from many parents who can't get a bus to take their children to school and that. Let's go to children, and the minister began regarding child poverty.
Yeah, he said an extra €1 million has been allocated to the CSO for the Growing Up in Ireland survey. He also announced a number of permanent changes to social protection payments. The qualified child increase is being raised by €4 to €46 per week for under 12s, €54 per week for over 12s. The hot school meals schools programme will be expanded to a further 900 primary schools from next April. Parents' benefit will be extended to 9 weeks from August next year. The monthly rate of domiciliary care allowance has been increased by €10. As we said, child benefit payment being extended to 18 years, children who are 18 in full-time education, and the income threshold for the working family payment is being raised by €54 a week.
I love that thing about, by the way, hot meals for schools. In my time, the nearest you got to a hot meal in school was a mug of cocoa, which tasted like tar. Anyway, in terms of childcare,
I heard you were getting turkey and stuffing and everything where you went to school, no? Is that not the case?
If we could catch up with the turkey, we might have had turkey and stuffing.
You had a personal chef, did you not, no?
No, you had, it was cocoa, a mug of cocoa in a tin mug, and an old cordon bun.
Right.
That you tried to get, and maybe steal a couple from the country lads, because they were more hardy altogether. Anyway, Pascal Donoghue said a further €338 million is being allocated to the core spending of the Department of Children. The National Childcare Scheme will see a further 25% reduction in childcare costs. People will welcome that, but they'll want to see the nitty-gritty in regards to that particular one. There'll be €64 million in disability support services, more than 90 additional residential places. 90 countrywide doesn't seem a lot.
No.
No, 1,400 day places for school leavers and increased personal assistance hours, but specific details for that haven't unfolded. There'll be a €10.5 billion is allocated to the Department of Education, but it's how that's going to be spread around. There'll be 200 school building projects beginning construction over 2024 and 2025, and the budget will provide for a further 1,200 additional special needs assistance, with the Minister also confirming that junior cycle students will be included in the free textbook scheme from September next year. That first year, second year, third years, along with primary school students, will now get school books. But that'll be next year before that kicks in. Maybe something to remember. We heard Pierce there on the Sinn Féin's Pierce...
Doherty.
O'Reilly kept coming into my head there for a minute, talking about the housing. So we'll move on. We've talked about social welfare and that. What about health, Owen? Because the overrun of the budget in health is quite enormous altogether. Anything new there?
Yeah, Minister Donoghue said the last 3.5 years have been a period of extraordinary challenges for the health service. He said the level of government spending on health has been unprecedented. He said a total allocation of €22.5 billion is being provided for in the budget, including an €808 million increase in core current funding to address demographic and service pressures. He said that €1.23 billion is being provided as part of the National Development Plan for the delivery of additional health infrastructure.
Yeah, there's other provisions as well. And as I say, the debate is still going on the Dáil. Let's get another snatch from Pierce Doherty.
Government took office. More than 15,000 children are waiting for first contact with their specialist disability team. On the other end of the scale, we have 6,000 older people who've been approved for home help but have been left waiting with no help. And the same challenge are faced with people with disability. In every section of our society, from young to old, for people with disabilities to mental health issues, it is clear that our health service is going in the wrong direction. So what do we have in the budget, given all of those facts, given all of the fact that it is going in the wrong direction since this government took office? What has this budget done? It's done next to nothing. There is very little in this budget that will give any comfort to patients or parents who are struggling to get access to basic health and basic care services. No urgency. No vision, no compassion. And that's the reality. You've just decided to forget about health. You failed time and time again to invest in the workforce and to plan for the future. And today the government boasts about record tax revenues. Yet you've delivered a standstill budget for health. There is no new funding for additional hospital beds. There's less capital investment than was promised in the National Development Plan for health. In fact, the health capital budget wouldn't even keep pace with inflation. It's real-time cuts that is actually happening to health service, which is a crying out for investment. And you have decided this at Cabinet, in all consciousness, despite the resources that we have of the state, to actually leave the health system that is breaking at the seams as bad this year, as bad next year as it is this year.
Well, indeed, and we'll hear a lot more throughout the day in all media in regards to that. Thanks again, Owen, for that. And Piers Doherty finishing his, well, not finishing, he's still on his feet, as many other politicians will be throughout the afternoon. Okay, we'll take a break there, back in a moment.